your glass and join me in my favorite toast. This is To Research, the podcast on cultivating a meaningful life and a better career by asking the right questions of ourselves, of each other, and of the world. Join me, hairstylist, salon owner, and business coach Lauren Dufresne, as I chat with creative professionals about seeing the opportunities in every challenge, addressing the elephants in the room, and learning to value curiosity over perfection. All right, I'm here with Stephanie Toome, and would you like to tell everyone what your background is and what your current role is at the Expert in Prepping?
Okay, so let me start with my current role. Mm-hmm. I am the head of customer experience for the Export-Import Bank of the United States, which is a United States government agency. Mm-hmm. We facilitate exports toward the creation of U.S. jobs. We are an independent agency, meaning that we make money for the taxpayer in the way of fees and interest from loans and loan guarantees.
Yay!
So my role at Ex-Im Bank has to do with customer experience and really bringing the voice of our customers into what we do on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be very daunting to do business with any financial institution, but particularly with respect to a government agency that's also a financial institution.
Yeah.
And we want to be there for our customers, and we want to make things easier for our customers. We have a strategic goal to improve the ease of doing business, so my work is grounded in that strategic goal. Before I came to Ex-Im Bank, my background was in Big Four accounting. I was with Ernst & Young for about 9 years, and I also worked for a law firm for about a year and a half, and my roles primarily there had to do with marketing and PR and business development and also the very beginnings of customer experience. Before we really even called it customer experience, my job at Ernst & Young was to sit down and talk one-on-one with our at-risk customers, our up-and-coming customers, and our existing customers about what's going well in our relationship, what could be better, what are your challenges coming up in the next 12 to 24 months. And we would find opportunities to grow our business, but we would also find opportunities to better ourselves. And so bringing that experience into my current role has been a great asset, and we still have a lot of work to do in government with respect to customer experience, but as we continue, we can keep the conversation going, we keep the mindset going, and we try to make things better for our customers.
This is awesome. I mean, this is why I wanted to talk to you, because you actually ask the tough questions, and you, like, your experience has involved doing that face-to-face, one-on-one, and that's something that a lot of creative professionals that I talk to have issues with. Mm-hmm. It can be a hard thing to do.
It can be a very hard thing to do. And one of the things that benefits me, and I've had a lot of time to meditate on this because I've been working in professionally for 28 years now, doing similar types of roles. Mm-hmm. My background in broadcast journalism met with the opportunity that I had at Ernst & Young to work in business development. And so when we had opportunities to elicit stories from our customers, to actually ask those what questions, one of the things that's really hard is we're born with an ability to see through our own eyes. It's human instinct. I mean, that's just how we're programmed.
So
we see through our through our own eyes first.
And we have to.
We have to. And it's just
how
the
experience
way
life.
Is. Right. It's just human instinct. But it's not human instinct to have empathy. And I think that empathy is something that you can learn over time, or you can come to understand over time, but it's not something that is human nature.
Okay, so I was going to ask, what's the hardest thing about getting an organization to refocus on the customer? And is it empathy? Is it training individuals to have empathy, or is there something else that kind of holds organizations back?
It depends on the organization. Mm-hmm. I think that different things can hold different organizations back. Sometimes it has to do with not having air cover at the highest levels of an organization. Air cover meaning that if you have a person who's the head of customer experience at your agency who's trying to be that human duct tape to make all of the pieces harmonize together, and you don't have a CEO or a COO or someone at the very topmost levels of your organization giving you air cover, so to speak. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. They're not, if they're not there to kind of back you up and have your back, then it can be very difficult to spread messages internally and to work on the kinds of projects that you need to work on
so
internally.
It starts with leadership.
I think it depends on the organization because sometimes I think that Well, actually, I think this is usually almost always true. That's a word. Usually almost always true that your frontline staff has the best ideas for improving the customer's experiences as well. It's so important to have that harmony internally because you need the senior most executives just as much as you need that line staff to all get in harmony so that everyone is doing their jobs and taking care of each other and providing resources, insights, and collaboration to do the things that you need to do to focus on your customers so that we can all keep having jobs.
All right. Yeah, totally. So this podcast is about asking the right questions. And what are some of your favorite questions to ask of those involved in the process to elicit the information you need to assist customers?
I'll give you two perspectives on that. My very favorite question to ask customers is, what are your challenges coming up in the next 12 to 24 months and or 3 years or whatever time span you want to assign to it? Because you get an idea as to what they are experiencing in their own professional lives that may tweak how you need to provide service or the things that you need to suggest to them or maybe additional resources that you could bring to the table to help them meet their challenges. For employees and line staff, one of the best, listening is more important than asking the right questions, but I realize you've got to start somewhere. Yeah. Listening is equally as important as asking the right questions, but asking them what are the biggest inhibitors you see to being able to serve customers the way that you know that they want to be served or need to be served? What are you seeing? What's missing from your repertoire or your arsenal of tools to do the very best job that you can do? And just keep that dialogue going. So those are some of my favorite questions to ask to really begin to get down into the heart of what we don't see in data. We all love data. Well, I love data. I know you love data too, Laura.
Yes.
And I absolutely love data, and data can give us a good picture and can inform us. But in order for data to drive us, we also need those qualitative remarks from our staff and from our customers to shape and customize what we need to do.
Yeah. That's a whole another big area, how to measure if we're moving closer. What I kind of heard from what you just said about asking questions and listening, whether it's knowing which questions to ask to get people talking, because sometimes even getting them talking is an issue, or they are already talking and really listening hard, that's kind of giving the direction that the organization needs to go. Like, you're listening to what the customers need, listening to what people need to do their jobs, and then having that sort of chart the course, and then metrics and measuring the success, and then also the qualitative comments, that's how you make sure you're staying on course? Is that sort of how you look at it?
That can help us judge.
If we're doing the right things?
Yes, it can help us judge if we're doing the right things. I also want to be sure that I point out that sometimes it's not only about employees and customers. Particularly in government agencies, we have oversight bodies, we have Congress, other stakeholders outside of our organization that we have to consider. And so you have to, and I think it's like this in many other businesses as well. It's not exclusive to government, but you have to balance the realities of the world you live in with the needs of customers. And you do your very best. You communicate the very best you can, use the resources the very best you can, but sometimes it's a delicate balance. Mm-hmm. But the data can help you determine. But of course, you first have to have your standards. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a standard,
there's nothing to measure against.
There's nothing to measure against. Yeah. So you really don't know, and you have to be very specific and measurable and realistic with those data points that you set for yourself. And so that's very important, but it's all a big package.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so are there any other, we've talked about questions and listening, are there any other favorite tactics that you have for steering the conversations and making sure that you get the information you need, or how do you convey that you're listening? And what are some of your best skills, I guess, that you employ in these conversations?
Well, the first thing is to shut up.
That is hard.
Sometimes it can be hard for people. But, you know, again, I think that comes back to my background in journalism, is trying to get that story, to elicit that story. And when you don't understand, ask the clarifying question or ask someone to say it in another way. And try to probe deeply into what their experience actually is and what is the outcome that they had hoped to get. Because our success is really only as good as our customers' outcomes. So we want to find out, okay, yes, we did a good, you know, our process was fine, but if our customer at the end of the day didn't really accomplish what they needed to accomplish, how successful were we? We have to really think about that and ask those meaningful questions. So in my particular job, being very specific right now, I like to find out from customers, did you accomplish what you needed to accomplish? Were you able to grow your export sales? Mm-hmm. Were you able to support or sustain or grow jobs as a result? Were you able to find new opportunities? And so not only do we want to know how well we did we do a good job? Did we answer the phone? Were we responsive? But did you, at the end of the day, have the outcome that you needed to have? Yeah. So that's what I like to ask in my specific job right now.
I love that because it's focusing on the outcomes that need to happen. Sometimes you can get so bogged down or so excited about improving your process, it can become detached from reality and from really the whole point of your existence.
Right.
And that could happen to an agency or to a company.
I think it's universal across a lot of organizations to think about it like this, you know, not just in government. Of course, in government, we want to make sure that our citizens are able to accomplish what they need to accomplish to have a better life. Jeb Dasteel, who's the chief customer officer at Oracle, co-wrote a book that came out recently called Competing for Customers. And in the book, he talks extensively about the meaning of measuring or keeping a pulse on your customers' outcomes. And I think about my time at Ernst & Young, and I think about my time when I would sit with CEOs and CFOs and ask them about their business outcomes. And it was a huge indicator of whether or not they were going to continue to purchase services from the organization if they were able to cut costs or have a successful audit or effectively meet their tax compliance responsibilities. In their eyes, it made a difference as to whether or not they were going to continue to do business with us. So it went, you know, and someone once said to me a long, long time ago, just because a customer buys from you doesn't mean everything is perfect. And I think that,
so important to remember.
Yeah.
You still got to keep asking questions.
You still got to find out, was this what you needed? Did you get what you needed? And what were your outcomes? And were those the kinds of outcomes that are going to make you use me again?
And feedback isn't always freely given. Like sometimes it's given and it's hard to take, but you have to remember to try to stay grateful because not everyone says anything and they might just walk.
Right.
You don't know if they're coming back. So just asking and listening.
It is. It's
maybe between the lines.
Absolutely. Definitely between the lines. And for those of us who are in this profession and we talk to customers and we want to know because we want to make things better all around, we know that feedback is a gift and negative feedback is an even bigger gift, but it is the hardest information to take back. And when you're in roles, when you're in leadership and you have to pass that news along, you have to find very diplomatic, persuasive, constructive ways to do it. And it's still not as easy to swallow if you're on the receiving end of that or you're on a collaborative team that's trying to solve that problem. But again, that's part of the finesse of being in roles when you're leading these kinds of things.
I guess in my line of work, oftentimes where a customer relationship falls apart, people don't ask the follow-up questions. And I actually, it's not that they don't want to, and I'm not sure it's that they don't know which questions to ask. I think sometimes they get, instead of thinking about the way the other person feels, the client, they get bogged down in how they feel.
Right.
And that maybe the people who end up navigating past that and finding a way to listen to the client instead of their own ego or their own fear or whatever is holding them back from doing the best job. Maybe they've had other experiences in life where they could totally relate and they could more easily build up empathy. And once you've practiced that for a while, you can bring it to the chair or you can bring it to your role that you have now, you know, because you had it first with people that were kind of like you in some way.
Right, right. And if the first test is put yourself in the other person's shoes, that's still very hard for
it's
some
still
people.
Very
it's still
hard.
Very hard. I mean, that's very simplistic and it's very naive to think that someone could just automatically put themselves in someone else's shoes. But when you do try to put yourself in the same situation, but maybe in a different context, for example, if you're the provider and you don't want to ask those questions, but maybe you've been the customer in another situation.
Great example.
You can think, wow, I wish they would have asked me. I hate that I'm never going to shop there again. But if they just said they were sorry. And if you can kind of turn it and just flip that lens to an experience lens, you might be able to begin having a little more empathy than if you just say, you know, I can't put myself in their shoes. But just think about it in a different context with you on the other side, in a different scenario.
It kind of comes back to what you initially said about how we all are wired to experience life through our own eyes, and that we have to get past that. Have you read Brené Brown? I thought we'd talked about this.
What's the name of the book?
Daring Greatly. And
no, I haven't read that one.
I heard her speak at South by Southwest, but she has a part that's helped me a lot, and I think it was in Daring Greatly, where she said whenever you start to get bogged down in your own thoughts and feelings about a situation, and you're at odds with someone, right? To stop and instead of just assuming you know what their intentions are, say, this is the story I'm writing in my head about the situation. And then give them the chance to refute it, basically.
Right. Just go to them and say that? Use those words?
I don't know about the word. I have not owned those words.
Okay.
If I know that there's something amiss, to instead of just taking offense or shutting down,
yes,
or using any of those defense mechanisms that get in the way of a real conversation, because
right,
whenever we're talking about empathy or feedback, there's the potential for feelings.
Right. Yes, most definitely.
And we ignore them at our peril.
Right.
Because listening between the lines often means you have to face those things.
Yes.
And so in any of those situations where there could be feelings, instead of just assuming I know what's going on, if I'm taking it one way and I think that we're at odds, instead of just saying, well, we're at odds now, you know, letting them walk out or something, it's better if I can say, this is the story I'm writing in my head about what just happened,
mm-hmm,
but they might have a different story. I'm reserving judgment until I get their story.
True,
does that
true,
make sense? So
yes.
I can still say, I think you're wrong.
Right.
But I try not to let myself judge. I mean, when I really mess up, it's because I didn't do this, but.
You're so right.
Yeah.
Perceptions and intentions are two different things.
Yes.
And they can be what you intend to do and what someone else perceives. And I really, you know, you would like to think that someone else should be responsible for making that right, but it really is up to you to make it right and to have that conversation to try to clear it up. It's just a matter of being mature and having wisdom and trying to separate yourself from those feelings that you can really get bogged down. You know, guarding your thoughts against, you know, don't let that really bad seed get planted in your head and let something bad spiral,
yes,
out of control before you have a chance to really, you know, pay attention to the quality of what it is that you're growing between.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's hard enough to do that yourself, and then there's the whole another level of management or overseeing customer relationships that you yourself aren't fully involved in, and then hoping that you can coach other people to practice that skill. It's hard enough to do oneself, but
it very, yes,
whole another level.
I agree.
You're trying to encourage other people to do that.
Right, right.
Yeah. So what would you say is the most surprising thing you've learned in the last year?
Wow.
Anything just jump out at you?
I don't know that a lot surprises me anymore, but I'm fascinated by so many things.
Oh,
maybe not surprised, but fascinated,
yeah,
by so many things. Our particular government agency over the last year was effectively shut down for, mm-hmm, a number of months, and it challenged the way that we communicated with our customers. Unfortunately, we were in a situation where we were not able to serve customers. So it was a very busy time in trying to communicate and help our customers understand that their experience wasn't necessarily something that the person on the other end of the phone had control,
ooh,
over.
Yeah.
But again, helping them to find alternatives to taking care of what they needed to take care of that our government agency could then not provide to them. So when I reflect back on that, it,
mm-hmm,
fascinates me that we're still writing the book. We're still writing the book on how to effectively communicate with customers,
yeah,
and provide experiences to the best of our ability that still help customers to achieve what they need to achieve in their businesses and lives.
Mm-hmm.
There may be other things too, but
that's a really good one. So I have to ask you about image.
Okay, I know this.
Especially your professional image, because you've been my client. How long has it been? Like 2 years?
Couple of years.
Yeah. You were with me at Oakton, then we moved to Tyson's,
yeah,
and yeah. So we talk about this a lot in the chair, but and I know your hair is very important to you.
Yes, it is
it
very important. The fringe.
the sweep. You know, what does it mean to you to walk into work,
mm-hmm,
to walk into one of these tough conversations, especially, mm-hmm, and feel put together?
Okay. I had a mentor at Ernst & Young. Mm-hmm. His name was Greg. Greg Shane, I'll say his whole name. He was fantastic, and he's still fantastic. He's since retired, and he said something once a long time ago, and it stuck in my head, one of those things that sticks and it never leaves. And he said, "You're always communicating."
Oh.
Just, you are always communicating.
After my own heart.
Four words. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was how you dress, how you wear your hair, how you carry yourself, where you sit in a meeting. Do you sit at the table? Do you sit in the mezzanine seats? Do you sit at the front of the room or the back of the room? Communicate something. And what do you want to be communicating with how you present yourself in all ways, shapes, and forms? And I think when it comes to having difficult conversations, it is a conversation and it is communication at the most fundamental level. And I think with respect to how you present yourself, for me, it's consistency. And I want there to be an open feeling. And so those are the things that I try to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, has more to do with hair and makeup and just as much to do with body language and openness, mm-hmm. and eye contact.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had other influences, too, when it comes to image. And if I can give a couple of them a little bitty shout out.
Yeah, definitely.
My mother was the first person that really was an example of style and image to me. Mm-hmm. We had no money growing up, but my mother could sew. And I was 15. When I was 15, I was 5'10". Ooh. So 5 feet 10 inches tall at 15, living in the middle of nowhere, Missouri. You can't find, you know, this is 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You can't find things that are long enough, hems that are long enough. Inseam. So she made our clothes. But she made sure that they were correct. You know, she went to great lengths. And I can just remember how she labored over making sure that it was long enough, that it fell correctly. And also to my grandmother, who said, "You can never go wrong with black and white, and wear the pearls." She passed away about 8 years ago, and one of my most prized possessions is her pearls. I now have those pearls that she would always wear, and I love them so much. So when it comes to style and image, I had some really great role models in the women in my life.
Yeah.
And of course, Greg and his words, "You are always communicating." And I think that that carries such weight in difficult conversations that you need to have. People need to be able to trust you. And I think that the way that you present yourself has a lot to do with whether or not they feel that they can.
That's really fascinating. So what would you say you look for in all of your service providers? So you're a busy professional, mom, and you've got a lot going on. And when you're choosing who to work with, I would just be interested to know, do you have your criteria?
Yeah. Let me start with where I work.
Okay.
First of all, you know, I've been building a function for the last 4 years from the ground up in a management discipline that almost no one really understood 4 years ago. And more people understand it now. So criteria-wise, any service providers that I would work with, technical competency is the most important thing. The most important thing. But communication ability and collaborative and counseling ability, consultative ability, is just as important, because they have to understand how to ask the right questions, how to listen for the right answers, and then integrate that into their technical approach. Mm-hmm. But one thing that we cannot have is we can't be technically inept in the things that we do when it comes to data, measuring the voice of the customer, executing and administering, say, a survey or a customer interview program. Mm-hmm. We have to get that right, because that's our baseline credibility.
Yeah.
I think for personal, creativity. Creativity, communication, and counseling ability. I remember when I first sat down in your seat, you sat down with me before you even laid a finger on me and said, "Here, you know, what, tell me about the work that you do, tell me about the environment that you work in, is it conservative, is it creative?" And you asked me all the right questions, and you kind of showed me some ideas and some directions that you were going, and I was able to say, that's not really me, but I mean, what you showed me was fabulous away, but I could have very easily have said, I'm not quite sure, and you would have continued to counsel with me. And I also trusted you right away, because you were honest about, you know, there are certain things that your hair is just not going to do.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that honesty and the collaborative nature of it and the creativity, too. And I continue to appreciate that about you. And I would say I look for that in my others as well.
I think it's the follow-up questions, too. Like, whatever you start with, you said earlier, not stopping until you understand and continuing to ask questions until there's that eureka moment where you realize you're both on the same page and you're both excited about where you're going next. I think too often in different service roles, definitely in my job, I see people, stylists, like, will stop and they don't fully understand. They kind of understand and they give it their best try, but they're sort of in the dark versus continuing to ask questions until you really, really know.
Right,
and
right.
You have a deep connection.
Right, right. And sometimes I think it's better for the customer, too.
Oh, yeah.
When you continue to ask those questions, because
you might learn something.
You might learn something, or they may say it in a, say, repeat the same thing that they just said, but say it in a different way where there's more depth or resonance to what they're saying so that you understand more deeply, or maybe a certain, through a certain lens that you didn't hear the first time.
Well, I mean, the fact is, even with the best of intentions and being a well-trained communicator, you can still get it wrong.
Yes.
And so the more aware you are, that sometimes that can be intimidating, but I think if you keep asking questions and you have that humility and you know that you could still get it wrong, I don't know. I just don't like assuming that we're 100% on the same page until I have that feeling. Like, we're connected about this.
I agree.
There's an excitement. Someone should almost leap out of my chair and, like, run to the shampoo bowl and say, let's go. Like, when the client is there, I know that it's time.
Right, 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 right.
Because even at that point, if it, say, something goes awry, I know that we're in a place where it'll be easy to talk about it and to tweak it from
that
place. Whereas if I didn't wait till that point, they would look back and say, you know, she didn't quite listen.
Yeah, and they might walk away without saying anything because they're either too shocked or they're afraid that if they let you touch them again, it might be even worse.
Right. So it's all about building the trust before you start working together.
Yeah.
And you said something else important that I just, in case any hairdressers listen to this, that I think is so important and can be forgotten. You said we had an important conversation before I lay a finger on you.
Yes.
And that's, yeah, like sometimes it's almost a comfort blanket, jumping to touching, like jumping to getting your hands in the hair. We feel very comfortable standing behind you in the mirror and touching your hair. That's what we do most. But until we have that rapport and until we're both excited equally about this project, it's a little weird. Like, I have to remember that it's your space. And until you kind of want me there.
Right, right.
It's this whole funny thing.
It was perfect for me. It definitely was in line with what I expected and appreciated.
I should do an episode on jobs where you touch people.
That's okay. Because
that's a form of communication, too. Like, people always talk about the head massage.
Yes.
And how important that is and how different many people could feel about the same shampooer, or how different, you know, yeah. I mean, I get a lot of feedback on that part.
Mm-hmm.
Probably less so to my face about me, the way that I tug on people's hair and stuff, but yeah, it's a whole nother form of communication.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we're always communicating.
Right.
I think that gets...
That makes me think massage therapists,
the massage
doctors.
Oh, because there's such a range there.
Yeah.
There's such a range.
Right.
And that's a big part of how they serve the customer. I mean, we can really rub you the wrong way.
Is that a double entendre?
Yeah. I've definitely had that with massage therapists, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back to feedback.
Okay.
Because it just can't be harped on too much.
Right.
That it's not always readily given.
Mm-hmm.
So learning ways. I guess one of the reasons I'm so interested in choosing the questions is that I'm afraid of missing feedback. And it's something that we really have to ask for.
Right.
It's not something that we should just expect is being given. And if we don't hear anything, then it's all good.
Right.
Like, I don't assume it's good
right.
ever. I assume there's something I could do better
right.
at all times.
Right.
So it's a matter of constantly trying to
right.
get to the bottom of that. So yeah, what are your thoughts about feedback and how you get it out of people?
Like I said just a few minutes ago, you know, just because they pay doesn't mean they're happy.
Yeah.
Just because they buy doesn't mean they're happy. But
totally.
I think with feedback, it can be difficult for a couple of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the importance again. The only thing worse than not asking is asking and not following up.
Oh, so true.
There's nothing that will put a customer off more, a few things that will put a customer off more than if you ask for their feedback and then you really don't do anything with the feedback or even come back to them to say, there's nothing I can do about that right now, or, you know, in some word it in some Make way that they understand. Well, or let them know that we heard you. We're not in a position to do that right now. We value that, and we're going to hold on to that for when we are able to devote resources or time to that, but just closing that loop. And I think another thing that's so hard about it is, again, is human nature, and I call these my 5 Ds, defend, defer, deflect, deny, distract. In the face of feedback, those are our natural human instincts. We defend, we get defensive, we defer, oh, I'm not going to think about that now. We deflect, deny, and distract you with something else. Oh, you know, hey, look, there's the Goodyear blimp. instead of actually listening for the feedback. And it can be very difficult. And I will admit, I'm not perfect either. It's very difficult for me. And I think it's just human nature. Mm-hmm. But if we want to be better, if we really, really want to be better, even, you know, the customer's not always right, but they're still our customer.
Yeah. And but we still need customers to live.
And we still need customers to live. That's right. And so we have to find a way to figure out how to balance that. And so I think feedback is very nuanced. We think about it in a linear fashion sometimes, on a scale of 1 to 5, how satisfied were you? But there's so many nuances to that. And we have to be cognizant of that. And then the way in which it's going to be accepted is going to vary based on person to person and based on the customer who's giving the feedback.
So in your job, are you responsible to people who are just begging you to tell them what the customer wants and are very open to that feedback? Or are you having to sort of persuade those around you to listen to the customer and that, no, we need to shift this because it's not quite in line with what the customer's saying? Like, you see what I'm asking?
Yeah.
So, or in any role have you been in a tough spot there as far as persuading your organization?
It's usually a tough sell.
I would
it's
think so.
It's usually a tough sell because people are so busy. Mm-hmm. They're already knee deep or more in so much work that if you bring something up, it can feel like something that's additional that they just don't have the time or the capacity to deal with at that time. Mm-hmm. So it can be a little bit difficult. But for me, and this is something that I think that other chief customer officers and CCO equivalents have learned, you have to keep the conversation going. In whatever way that you can, you have to keep that conversation going. Mm-hmm. You can't just sweep something under the rug. And today might not be the absolute best day to work on this or fix this, but we need to close the loop with the customer, and we need to keep this on our radar as things proceed. So keeping that conversation going.
Yeah, and I guess trusting that if it's on the radar, like it will be. You're still doing a service, even if you can't make everything happen today that you would want because you were just talking to the customer.
Right, right. And I'm in a very, I feel very, very fortunate in that I have customers who want to talk.
That's great.
The customers want to talk. Our intermediaries want to talk. They want to help us be a better organization. And I think we are very, very fortunate to have that. And in my past lives, where we've elicited feedback, sometimes they have just been waiting for someone to ask them. Sometimes they've been holding, in my past lives, they've been holding information or a grudge, maybe a little bit of a grudge for the last 10 years about something that happened 10 years ago, and it's really been bothering them, and it's precluded them from doing more business with the organization that I've been working with. But then when they have a chance to get it out and bring it to light, we may or may, the ship may have already sailed, and we may never be able to have a chance to make that particular thing right again, but by asking and hearing it and giving them a chance to move on, maybe a little bit like a therapy session, we've opened the door again. We've opened the door again to having a potential business relationship, and it may never work again, but having that conversation, you know, even 10 years later, even if something happened 10 years ago, getting it out, it's better than it just kind of looming out there.
And maybe you learn something about the organization because of that feedback. So even if it doesn't save that relationship, it might help in another relationship
Absolutely.
With a different customer.
Absolutely. And again, perceptions and intentions, because sometimes whomever may have offended a client, they may not have intended to do that, and they may not even realize that they did it. But then they find out 10 years later, you know, it
it's a big deal.
Yeah, it can be a big, it can be a big deal. It can be. There's only been one customer that I've ever not been able to get back.
Wow.
Only one that I've ever not been able to get back, but it was a really very, 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 very mm-hmm. difficult situation. And if I were the customer,
I don't know
that I would have either. This was in a past life.
In a past life. Well, wow. What was your takeaway from that experience? Anything? Did you learn anything, or
yes.
Was it just like, well, sometimes this happens?
Well, my takeaway was that in that particular instance, we needed to do more with soft skills training.
Ah.
Because it had to do with a communication snafu. That's really, it didn't have to do with a service provider being technically inept.
Huh.
It had more to do with a soft skill just being completely obliterated and being embarrassing and, it just wasn't good at all from a soft skills perspective. So my takeaway was we got to do more soft skills training. We have to continue to emphasize soft skills, and we've got to make sure that we are on top of continuing to ask this client in the future, you know, what could we, you know, if the door is open, if the door could possibly be open. At that time, it seemed like it would never be open again, and they never came back as long as I was there.
Yeah.
But we have to continue to look at that with other customers, too,
mm-hmm.
and see how our other customers are feeling about our soft skills.
Yeah. Soft skills are super important.
It's amazing that you can lose on soft skills.
Oh, yeah.
You can be the best hairdresser. You can be the best accountant or lawyer. Mm-hmm. But if you're not adept at basic human conversation and communication and collaboration.
It's like if you can't work with people might not want to work with you.
Yeah. It's so fundamental, and it seems so easy.
But people poo-poo it all the time. Like, it's just not given it's not given that much attention. I don't know if it's hard for people to talk about it because it seems like something that would come naturally. I think too many people think it's natural. Like, you either have it or you don't, and we're supposed to feel sorry for the people who don't, I guess. And,
yeah.
Like, instead of helping them.
Yeah.
But I very much believe it's a skill that can be built.
The futurists say.
I was born with none of them.
What I was going to say is the futurists say that eventually there will be an algorithm for everything.
Mm-hmm.
There will be an algorithm for everything, and that means that social skills and human intelligence will be the most sought after skills in the future. And so if we're really looking toward the future, if we're really being honest mm-hmm. about what the future holds, if we're laying the table for the future, then we have to take a look at it. And there are fun and interesting ways to do soft skills training for your people.
Mm-hmm.
Improv training is one way where my current job, we hired an organization to come in and do improvisational training with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent just one hour with a group of employees. If you've ever seen the movie or the show, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
Where it's all built on scenarios and, here's a scenario, play it out, go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun, and people let their hair down, and they learned ways to communicate more efficiently, find better ways to build bridges through communication with people that they were playing and through a scenario with. And it was fun. It didn't have to be, doesn't have to be something that's, led from a podium or from a computer.
Right.
It was something that, and that's a new way that a lot of people are looking at now, is through improv, training their people on soft skills through improv.
Makes a lot of sense. Wow.
It's fascinating.
It is. All of these things are fascinating. And we talk about them all the time, but it was nice to be able to talk about them in such a focused manner.
Yeah, definitely.
And to share it.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Stephanie.
I love to talk about these things, especially with you, because I know we're like-minded on
these
things.
Yes, so like-minded. It's scary. But
it's fun.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of To Research. For more information or to send me the questions that have been surfacing in your life, visit my website, cutcolorculture.com/listen.